Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now. In a city where time disappears, we create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big. We go all night. And here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. We are in Las Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament, and it was a very historic and a very sad day yesterday for the Pac-12, at least for someone like me who grew up in Los Angeles. It was the last USC and UCLA men's basketball games in the Pac-12. USC losing to U of A, UCLA losing to Oregon. And it was one of those moments where I'm watching courtside at T-Mobile Arena thinking that this day did not have to come, that there was a pathway for the Pac-12 to survive. Again, no knock on USC and UCLA. They were the first out the door. They are moving to the Big Ten. This conference could have survived without those schools. In fact, when you look at the Pac-12 football championship, an amazing contest, Washington and the Ducks, Washington going on to the national championship game. Whoever comes to play in the Pac-12 men's basketball championship game will not be USC and UCLA. They certainly could have brought in two more schools, maybe Hawaii, maybe San Diego State, maybe UNLV. They could have kept the Pac-12 alive, and they should have. But listen, wanted to commemorate, I guess, this historic moment and play for you the post-game sound that I got from T-Mobile Arena. First, UCLA head coach Mick Cronin and Dylan Andrews. And then we'll hear from UCLA head coach and the infield, DJ Rodman and Joshua Morgan.
All right, welcome in UCLA. Coach, we'll let you have an opening statement, then we'll open up for questions.
Defensively, we were really bad in the second half. Combined with we didn't make shots, 2 for 11, and we missed a bunch of free throws, some of them front ends of the bonus. That's what got us beat. I'm not commenting on officiating, so don't ask. Have the heart to write what you saw. That's what I would tell you.
Okay, we'll open it up to questions. We'll start here on the left with Ben.
Ben Welch, Los Angeles Times. Should we go players first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dylan, what was the plan going into the last play, and how did it kind of unfold in your eyes?
I mean, coach just told me, you know, it was 4 seconds left, that I just have 4 dribbles, and, you know, to make a play, we had a fade screen for Will. We had another a ghost screen for me, and then just to make a play out of that.
He did a great job. Ball just didn't go in. Excellent execution by Dylan in that situation.
Coach Eric Lampton, the second Culver City Observer. Your role is multifaceted. You have to play the role of a mentor, disciplinarian, sometimes a teacher. When you reflect on the 23-24 team, what will you think of this team?
I would need time for that. I would tell you just off the top of my head, in coaching, it's hard when you're asking guys to do stuff they're not ready to do yet. They're not trained to do yet. And unless your talent supersedes your inexperience, it's really, really hard. And our talent didn't supersede our inexperience this year. So, therefore, I had to ask a lot of guys to do stuff they weren't quite ready to do.
Dave Woods, Bruin Report Online. Dylan, you guys were down 63-53, I think, and then went on a 9-0 run. A lot of fighting, scrapping for balls. What do you think that said about the toughness that's developed for this team?
I mean, for sure, just momentum was just carrying on throughout that whole entire that 9-minute stretch. It felt good. You know, we started playing defense. I feel like we got away from that, you know, during the game. And, you know, we were more focused on the offensive part of it. And as you can see, man, they scored, I think that says 38 to 20 in pain points. And, man, they really killed us down there. We have to go back to the drawing board and just figure that out, because it's just unacceptable.
Dylan, how will you when you reflect over the season, how have you grown? And going into the offseason, what aspects of your game will you focus on?
Just working on, you know, being more of a leader, more of a vocal leader, and just being an extension of Coach Cronin as well. And just, you know, just working on my game 24/7, just being ready to, you know, whenever my number is called, man, just be ready, so.
Mick, what makes Dante just so hard to defend?
Experience. Good player, playing his fifth season.
Michelle here in the front.
But the last two times we played Oregon, Adem played 16 minutes and 18 minutes. Tonight, we're plus 7 with him on the floor. What if he'd have played 30 minutes? Plus 12, plus 15, easy victory.
Michelle.
You guys saw the same stuff I saw, and I've already watched it on the video.
Michelle Gardner, Arizona Republic. Coach, obviously UCLA is the brand in this conference when it comes to basketball. Your last Pac-12 game, can you kind of talk about your thoughts on, you know, the Pac-12? And
Sad. I think I would only hope, I think I know this because I follow it close, although I've never spoken to our head of the NCAA, Mr. Baker. He's doing everything he can to save college sports, literally everything he can. And all you got to do is look at what happened to this great conference and realize it can happen to all of college sports. Like people with all this stuff, I'll throw something out and people will say, well, that can't happen. I said, well, if you'd have met me 5 years ago and I'd have told you all this was going on, you'd have said, well, there's no way. You're not in the Big Ten. There's not collectives recruiting and paying players. Courts saying the NCAA, every time we have a rule, the court says you can't have one. I mean, it's, you know. So here's what I got for you. And Fale Dante is making NIL money and say it's, let's just assume it's better than what he can make professionally next year. He should get an attorney and he should get an injunction so he can keep playing college. Because we lose every other case, the NCAA. And I know you used to look at me like, you're crazy. But why wouldn't he do that? Because in our co-eds, we're taking away his right to make a living. I bet he would win. I mean, every other case wins. So, I mean, the whole thing's nuts. You know, but as far as the Pac-12 look, you know, it's, I feel bad for the West Coast basketball fans, then personally for UCLA fans, and mainly for the alumni that have hung so many banners and just been such a illustrious part of the Pac-12, you know, records and all the, you know, all that stuff. Where's all that go? Like Don McLean, leading scorer in the history. I mean, what would, you know, I might have to go have a few cold ones with Don. He's going to be really depressed. I know him. Worried about him now that I say it. All right, guys. We good?
Sorry, one more.
Yep.
Jan played a ton of minutes tonight.
Yes.
And he also played yesterday. What do you thought of his play the last couple of games?
I think he's been a great kid all year, listening, trying every day. He's a great example of what you want as a coach. Yeah, you know, you ask kids, hey, whether you play or not, to come in, work your ass off, have a great attitude, and very few do that, and he does. So I was just rewarding him. And we have some other guys just not producing, or they don't listen. So I was just, you know, he listens, and he tries. He does two things really, you know. So I just wish I could get him quit shooting off 1 foot.
One more, if I could. We saw a lot of growth, obviously, from Dylan, Jan, the last couple of games, Adai over the last month or so. How will you kind of balance, like, wanting to keep as many of these guys together?
Yeah, I, you know, we just lost. I get it. We'll talk.
Okay.
We'll go over all. Let's get the hell out of here. I'm sure Dana's out in the hall. You know, look, it's all crazy. I mean, everybody's a free agent, so, I mean, I know, it's the way it is, so we'll deal with it all, so.
All right,
buddy.
Thank you.
All right, buddy.
Thank you, Coach. Well, it's always difficult to lose your last game. We're very proud of our team, the seniors, these two guys here, and some others. Our team really battled today. First half, our defense was outstanding. Really made it tough on Arizona, and they made it tough on us. And just didn't bounce our way. Our offense wasn't good enough. We missed a lot of shots and flipped some balls up off balance. But very proud of our team the last month, playing great basketball. Really turned our season around after all the injuries we had and all the adversity. Very, very proud of our team to come back and play our best basketball. This team has improved dramatically from the beginning of the season, especially with guys in and out of the lineup all season. And for them to stick together and really compete the last month, they've done a great job.
All right, as a reminder, just raise your hand if you have a question. We'll bring over the microphone. We'll start over here in row two.
On the left. Luke Evans, Orange County Register. Andy, after a long stretch of improved play offensively, you had that drought just, you know, towards the end of the first half, I think 6 minutes without a bucket. Just, you know, from the last time you played Arizona, what went wrong there? Was it their defense? Was it just the mental aspect of not being able to hit a shot? Just what went on there?
Well, it was very physical first half. I think we had six fouls before they had one. So very, very physical. Both teams were competing at a high level. I think it was 19-16. Isaiah had the and-one, missed a free throw. But then we were in the lane a lot the last 6 minutes of the game, first half, and so we had a couple of shots blocked at the rim. We had a couple where we didn't set ourselves and didn't finish in the lane. We also didn't kick out the open shooters. And a lot of those shots that went in last Saturday just didn't fall for us today. You know, it's hard when your leading scorers, especially Boogie, had a tough shooting night, and we just didn't convert when we had open looks, and also, as I said, we were off balance too much when we got in the lane.
Any questions? Right here, second row on the right.
Scott's into a Devil's Digest for any of you guys. What's it feel like to be a part of the last Pac-12 tournament, at least of its kind?
Josh, you've been in it a long time. DJ, you've been in it for 5 years, so you guys answer.
Yeah, I mean, it is a bummer. I will say when I came here, Pac-12 was always my favorite conference. I always wanted to come to a Pac-12 school, and, you know, grateful every day that Andy recruited me here. It's definitely a little bittersweet. I am happy that I was able to play in the last Pac-12 tournament. Obviously, it didn't go the way we wanted it to, but end of the day, I am just happy with the team, happy with the program, and very grateful to be here.
And been in it 5 years. I wasn't very emotional because we lost, but more so because the journey that I took, or like, I don't want to sound selfish, but just the journey I took to get to where I am. And the Pac-12 has meant a lot to me. Obviously, I transferred and stayed in the Pac-12 because I loved it so much, and just being close to home. So, I mean, yeah, it means a lot. And I don't know, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
On the left here, second row.
Oh, me. Andy, just, you know, the way that the season began, the hopes that you guys had, the recruiting class, the veterans, what have you. When you look back at everything, ultimately, is this just kind of a disappointing season when you sum up everything that's happened the last few months?
No, I'm not disappointed at all. I think we've been to four straight NCAA tournaments. We had a bye in this tournament for first time in 5 years. We had to play on opening night. We're the only team that finished third or better the last 4 years, and we were 95-36 the last four seasons, which is the fourth or fifth best record in the country. And so we're used to winning. We had some serious off-season injuries and surgeries, and then we had some serious injuries in November, and then we and of course, the first week of January, we had our two leading scorers go down at the same time, with Boogie with his hamstring and Isaiah with his broken hand, and Josh got sick and lost 15 pounds. We lost three starters all at once. We lost six straight games. So, yeah, was it hard to go through that? Of course. So disappointing, no. Challenging, adversity, yes. Keeping these guys together mentally, guys playing different positions when we had all the injuries. In November, we practiced with seven players for 3 weeks because we had five guys out. Bronny and Vince didn't even start the season on time. So was it challenging? Very, very challenging. Disappointing? Absolutely not. Because the last month, once we got healthy, Boogie and Isaiah came back. Boogie finally had recovered from his hamstring injury, and then Josh came back. We're very proud of this team. We've competed at a very high level, winning five out of the last six. In fact, we could have had seven or eight wins in a row. I know we lost an overtime or double overtime game and won at the buzzer on a road game. And so looking back in the season, a lot of challenges, but as a head coach, I've never had this many injuries in my 29, 30-year coaching career. My first job was in 1994 in the Milwaukee Bucks. That's 30 years ago. And this is times 5, 6, 7, times 10 the amount of injuries we've had in one season, especially with your best players at the same time. And then you take our leading shot blocker out. We'll look back on this as, you know, everybody has to go through adversity in their academic, their athletic career. That's what college students, sometimes, especially athletes, some people think that they're beyond what a normal person goes through, but there's adversity in every college student's life, and these guys did it on and off the court and to battle, and that's what college athletics is about, to figure out, stay together as a team. And so I'm very proud, and our staff is very proud of these young men for sticking together, because what they went through this year from a mental aspect, it really, I think they'll remember this rest of their lives of how to stay together and compete.
Far right, second row.
Andy, in the first half, it seemed like the offense was pretty stagnant. Isaiah did a lot of dribbling up at the top of the key, and then you tried to get into something very late in the shot clock. Was that intentional?
Well, we don't like stagnant offense, Rich. If you want to just come out and say our offense sucked, you're trying to, if that's okay, if that's what you want to say. But we rely on Boogie and Isaiah for a lot of shot creation, and when they drop coverage with Ballo and Krivas, we have an advantage, because if we set a ball screen and can get in the lane, we did get in the lane a lot. We didn't have a lot of movement off the ball. We did a better job in the second half, but we caught a lot of sets and plays for our shooters and for our scorers in the first half. They do a lot of switching, and they're a great defensive team. We play great defense the first half, so today. So sometimes you run your initial screening action, it's guarded, and a lot of these plays on both sides of the ball, if you've been watching college basketball, it ends in a ball screen or something to get your guard free, because they're bigs and drop coverage. And it wasn't necessarily the stagnant part. It was our lack of finishing in the lane, because we did not set ourselves. We didn't shot fake. We got shots blocked at the rim. We didn't kick it out. And some of our guys, when they get sped up and drove in the lane, they didn't have the ability to just stop, pivot, shot fake, and make the right play. And we did that last Saturday at a very high level. Tonight, in the first half especially, we did not do that.
You're on the left, second row.
Aaron Heisen, Rivals, DJ and Josh. Kobe has talked a lot about how you guys have just found your roles since everybody's gotten healthy. But how do you feel like this last, like, 6-8 game stretch has brought you guys together with the winning?
You know, as Coach said, we had struggled a lot with changing lineups because of injuries, a bunch of different things. So I'd say this past month, especially in March, we've been really buying into exactly who we were as players. You know, I have my role, DJ has his role, all the starters have their roles, and even people coming off the bench know, and we expect them to know what they can and can't do. And I feel like that is something that we've been doing. And on defense, I would also think that everyone bought into, especially this month, as a whole, everyone bought into the program. You know, we talk about being on the string. If someone gets beat, someone helps you. And I think that we've been doing that a lot better. Unfortunately, you know, you got to give it to Arizona. They definitely went out and they played their brand of basketball. Unfortunately, ended up in a loss for us.
Here in the middle, third row.
Eric Lampkins, the second Culver City Observer. Coach, I want excuse me. Coach, you entered the season with the top five recruiting class. I want to be fair. This season, you guys have battled a rash of injuries, as you aforementioned. I'm curious, what needs to happen for this team to take a step forward, and what's your plan helping the team move forward?
Well, we haven't thought about moving forward yet, to be honest. We were focused on today's game. We were focused on getting this team better. Every year in college basketball, you have changeover on your roster. We'll look at that here quickly with the nature of the transfer portal and NIL, and we'll have to figure out who will be back on our roster, and then what we need to fill in the different positions and our different needs of going forward. So that'll be all determined probably in the next week or two, and then we'll move on from there.
I got two more. One here on the left.
Yeah, Kevin Sweeney, SI. You know, Bronny completing his freshman year today. Where would you say he has grown? How has he grown the most throughout this year? And you know, how would you assess his first season in college?
Well, Bronny's a typical freshman. He went through a lot this year, physically and mentally. He's never wavered from being a great teammate and working extremely hard in practice. And you can count on him as an individual. He's on time. You need him to be somewhere, he's there. And you need him to count on him as a teammate or as a coach, he's there for you. And a lot of positive things to say about who he is as a person, his character, and how he buys into the team concept. And we love coaching him. He's a typical freshman and has learned and grown a lot this year. And we'll keep improving.
All right, that was UCLA head coach Mick Cronin, Dylan Andrews, USC's Andy Enfield, DJ Rodman, Joshua Morgan. Again, the last time USC and UCLA's men's basketball teams will play in the Pac-12. The women's teams, however, they do go on to the tournament. You know, you're talking about two of the top five teams in the country there. So, looking forward to seeing the women continue, but that is the last time for the USC and UCLA men's basketball teams in the Pac-12. Let's leave it there for now. When we come back, a very special conversation with WWE legend Diamond Dallas Page. When we come back right here on the Mightier 1090 from California, the Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network.
We'll be right back with the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Time. There's nothing more valuable. It's what drives everyone to make the most of every moment. We celebrate living large in the now, in a city where time disappears. We create experiences that electrify the soul and memories that will last forever. We go big, we go all night, and here, everyone is invited. So get loose and get loud.
This is Circa. You'll have the time of your life.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Arash Markazi Show, presented by the Sporting Tribune on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio in Southern California, 98.5 The Bet in Las Vegas, and the Hawaii Sports Radio Network, 95.1 FM and AM 760 in Hawaii. Just as a reminder, if you have a question or comment on why to win tickets to an upcoming game in Southern California, Las Vegas or Hawaii, color hotline 310-400-0340. All right, our main man, Adrian Hernandez, did it again. We have a very special A&E biography that will air on Sunday, and it is highlighting the Hall of Fame career of Diamond Dallas Page. And I called up my man. I said, Adrian, we got to get DDP on. Not only is he a Hall of Famer, he's got DDP yoga. He was just at the Royal Rumble. We got to get this guy on. And, of course, our main man did it. So wanted to play for you now a very special conversation that the Sporting Tribune's Adrian Hernandez had this week with Diamond Dallas Page, really not only talking about his career, but about his relationship with Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, and a byproduct of that is his relationship now with the American Nightmare, Cody Rhodes, who is going to main event and highlight this upcoming WrestleMania. So a very special conversation. It's one that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. One of the most inspirational, not only the WWE superstars, but really most one of the more inspiring people that I've gotten a chance to get to know. So without any further ado, here he is, WWE Hall of Famer, Diamond Dallas Page.
DDP, I saw you in the press box at the Royal Rumble, and I said, I'm going to wait for the right moment. That moment is here. How are you, my friend?
Very good. It was so fun. When I went up into the press box, because I'm really good friends with Chris Van Vliet, right? And he had texted me, are you here at the Rumble? And after I did the little meet and greet that I did, I said, I had said, yeah. And I go, where are you? He goes, the press box. So I snuck into the press box and I sat down. He goes, where'd you come from? And it was really the best seat in the house was in the press box there. And afterwards, I was starting to leave with everybody because I wanted to see the ending. So all the press box, you guys had all left.
Yeah.
I stood there and watched because I wanted to see what he'd do. And then it looked like everything was going to empty out. So I started to leave. But, oh, my God, you know, walking out there with all the wrestling fans, it started to become pandemonium. So I figured, to hell with this. I'm going to walk through the people. And people, it was so fun. I wish I had a, like, this little selfie thing going as I was going for people going, wow, oh my God, because I'm walking. That's how I used to go to the ring all the time, through the people, right? And I love the way Cody, you know, when he's leaving, he's doing selfies. That's the stuff I used to do, man. Yeah. I would grab people's camera. They're going, no, please leave. I go, take a breath, relax, click. And so I see him doing that and signing autographs and doing, as he's leaving. And if it's a show that there are no cameras, he'll stay and talk to the people like he is. I said this a while ago. I said, the very first people's champion is the man, Muhammad Ali. Then it's Dusty Rhodes. Then it's Diamond Dallas Page. Then it's The Rock. And now it's Cody Rhodes. I mean, there will be so many people like, really mad, like, whoa, if he doesn't take this, if his story is not finished, and it couldn't be a bigger, better buildup because of that. And everything that happened in my career, like when I start to do the NWO angle where I turn them down, and it's supposed to happen on the third week. They asked me once, they asked me twice. The third week, I put the shirt on and I do what I'm going to do. Hit the diamond cutter on Scott and take Kevin over the top rope. But it gets pushed and it gets pushed and it gets pushed. Because the bottom line is the bookers did not believe that I was that guy, that I should have been the guy. But Kevin and Scott did. It took 11 weeks to get there and it pissed me off so bad. But it was the best thing that ever happened to me. The best thing to ever happen to me, because it told this story. And then Savage got involved. And then we had this unbelievable main event pay-per-view. And I win. And I'm telling you, Adrian, it took me to a different level that I never knew existed. And people from that match, their opinion, if they were on the fence, they were all in. It was that story. And then Savage had hurt his Achilles, so we couldn't do it the next month. So it got stretched to the next month. And it kept on going. That's what this is. This is that length of time that it took. If he'd have won last year in LA, it would have been awesome. But it wouldn't have meant as much. This in Philly, and Philly are some of the greatest wrestling fans ever. But it isn't just Philly, because you know, people come from all over the world. I think the Mania is number four for biggest draws to bring money into the community.
100%.
Like, of course, you know, the Super Bowl's number one. I think Olympics is number two. I don't remember where Mania is, if it's second or third or fourth or fifth, but it's somewhere in the top five. That's how big a deal it is.
And, you know, it's you telling that little tidbit of your career and that pivotal point in your career. And you're telling me and having to wait and having to learn patience. I was lucky enough to already see the episode that's going to air this Sunday. And the one thing that stuck to me, and it even applies to Cody, is persistence. Because you get injuries as a younger kid. In your 20s, you get injuries, but still, that dream of being a wrestler is in the back of your head. At 31, you finally get that chance. At 35, last resort, you're in the ring. And even when you get in the ring, people are like, he's too old. Where does that where does that persistence come from, in your opinion?
Oh, God. When I watched it, because doing the interviews, but it's all how they piece it all together, you know. People have been telling me my whole life what I can't do. So to me, it's like, okay, watch. And just watch. It's going to take a while. But I'm telling you, it's going to happen because I'm not going to let it go. I call it being pleasantly persistent. And I've used it so many times. I try to teach it to as many young bloods as I can. You know, like, you got to be persistent. You got to be relentless. You got to keep putting the work in. And you got to see it. Because people who say, I'll believe it when I see it, those people never see shit. But the people who say, I believe it because I see it, That's what's magic. And a guy like The Rock, who's the biggest star in the world, he's one of those cats who see it at a different level. When you can be the biggest star in the world, let's just name another one. Tom Cruise. Oh, what did he ever do? He was the biggest star in the world. And Rock knocked him off that spot. But he's one of us. So that he's involved in what's happening right now at Mania. Like, that is so magical. And it wouldn't have worked as well in LA. And from what I heard, he had commitments, so he couldn't do anything anyway. But for this to be here at this time in this place, like, if it wasn't Randy Savage that I beat back in 1997, if it was a guy who, it had to be Savage. Because Savage still was seen like, as big as you can go. And he's kind of like the James Dean of wrestling. I mean, everybody still dresses up like Randy. Everybody, including me, do the Randy impersonation. You know, everybody's wearing t-shirts. Like, he's like, I don't know how to say it, but, you know, a different level of icon. And that's a guy I beat to change my career. And he's the guy who made it happen. Scott and Kev set me up. Without those cats, it never happens. But man, Randy, I'll never forget that Randy, we were in the locker room getting dressed, and Arn came in, and he said, "So, Randy, what do you want to do tonight?" And every night, bro, I'm getting left laying by the NWO. That's what we're doing. Or I escape, maybe hit Virgil, you know, and escape through the crowd, you know. But most nights, I'm getting left laying. And Randy says, think I want to take the diamond cutter. Like, there's no cameras. There's no people there, you know. There's plenty of people. The place is packed. There was 5,000 people who can't get in because we were so hot at that time, and they hadn't started booking, except for Nitros and stuff, the big buildings yet.
Yeah.
We had like an ice hockey rink, so maybe it held 11,000 people. There's 5,000 people who couldn't get in. And we went out there, man, and he beat the hell out of me. He was stiff as hell at times. And you gave it right back, you know? But I wasn't getting much because he's about to do the J-O-B and he's going to make sure he's whooping my ass hard. And bottom line is, at some point I started to blow a comeback. He stopped me, picked me up, and diamond cutter. And I freaking slipped into that baby. And the roof blew off. And he'd been beating the hell out of me, so I just lay there. And he took the diamond cutter, so he's just laying there looking up at the lights. And I didn't move. And then the people started rumbling and rumbling and rumbling. And I just laid my arm over him. 1, 2, 3. And it was one of the loudest pops I've ever heard. And because it was so many people in that smaller building, it was surreal, man. And I could hear him say, think you know what we're going to do for, spring stampede. And I'm like, no. Like, you'll never believe. Yeah. You don't ever believe when something that huge in your in this business, you don't believe it until you're walking to the ring. And now you know they can't change it. You know? Yeah, they can try, but they ain't gonna. No, that's going down.
No, that's incredible. And really quick, by the way, you bringing up Macho Man, the elbow drop from him on the scale of 1 to 10 level of pain. Where is it at? Is that a 10?
25. 25. And I'm sure when Randy first started doing it, he took a brunt of it and to protect you.
Yeah.
But, bro, when I was 40, I turned 41 the night before I beat him. So my whole run's in my 40s, being on top. And Randy, if you were lucky enough to take the cut, take the elbow, he used you as his crash bag. The first time he did it, I'm just laying there. He goes, he knocked me out with that gimmick to the head. I'm laying there. When he landed on me, I thought, because he came from this side, I thought the left side of my body's rib cage just opened up and my guts were all over the ring. And I know he's going to do it again. Oh, man. Yeah, you probably can't use this, but I'll tell you, I pissed blood for 13 out of 15 weeks. I mean, bad. And the doctor told me, I didn't go to the team doctor. I went to my doctor. And he's like, you need to take 3 weeks off minimum. I'm like, okay. This is the biggest run of my life. I'm not doing anything. I'd have to have torn my rotator cuff and couldn't pick my arm up, you know, to take a break.
No, absolutely. And look, I know you have to talk to a lot of people, so I want to get a couple questions in real quick.
Sure.
And you're bringing up your run, Monday Night Wars, Attitude Era. It's just an era that I don't think anyone ever thought that it would get this massive. But look at what's happening now. The WWE from Australia to Philly, all over the world, selling out. Monday Night Raw, SmackDowns, everything going through the roof. Hell, professional wrestling is on TV 6 times a week at least. It's insane. I mean, even Super Bowl week, Cody and The Rock, that situation was being talked about more than the damn Super Bowl game. To you, could I have you compare the eras?
They are very comparable. As a matter of fact, I did a video. If you want to see it, go to my Instagram, Diamond Dallas page. It's also my athlete Facebook. But I had to speak on it because I was getting bombarded from my buddies and fans and people who want to know what I thought of it. And I was in Jamaica at the time, and I'd watched the slap scene around the world. And the fact that The Rock was turning heel to get there, because there can only be one baby face when you're in that spot. And him coming in, I mean, The Rock is such a classy cat, man. And you don't know what's real. And I wanted people to know this. Like, you don't know what's real and what's not. And that's when you blur the lines. That's when wrestling works at a different level. The beginning of my little 7-minute video, I'm showing all the stuff where Scott Hall shows up, and then Kevin, then Bischoff gets thrown through the, stage, and then Hulk, you think he's going to do the save for Randy, but then he drops a leg on him, and he starts. It goes from the outsiders to the NWO, and it was the hottest thing ever. And I was lucky enough to go through a bill through it and be ready when it got white hot. And I would have never thought that would happen again. But in a different way, it's happened again. When I was watching from Jamaica, there, this what I would call a press conference, but it was in an arena with like 15,000 people, like blew my mind. And then how they did with everybody bringing all the different, the shining stars of the superstars of the WWE out. And then here comes friggin' Roman, and then The Rock, and then Cody, and then Seth Rollins. I mean, man, I always say, it gets real, real fast out there. And when it does, it's magical, man. It's magical, and I love what they're doing. Anybody who's listening to this, go to my Instagram or Facebook. The one would be right before this. You talk about stuff I do outside of wrestling. The Butterbean story. Have you seen the Butterbean video yet?
Of course.
I mean, so powerful, man. And so that's up there if anybody's not seen it. And to see, like, that's what my program's all about. It's about taking the elite athlete to a different level, so that they, you know, preventative maintenance so they don't get injured, and to the athlete or the regular guy or girl that's injured and is in so much pain and they want to get out of it so that they can, you know, pick up their kids or their grandkids or whatever. And to see Butterbean go through that transformation, like I watched it with Jake and with Scott, now Marcus and Scotty Riggs, it's been an incredible time for me right now because it's all happening at one time. And Cody would be like the cherry on the top to be, it's going to be emotional, not just for me. It's going to be emotional for so many people. I don't know if you saw it, but before I ended up in the press conference, I saw him coming down the line. Of course, he's the ultimate babyface. He's doing the pictures and he's doing the autographs. And I just jumped over the railing. You know, nobody stopped me, you know? And when he turned around, I was right there. And we had the bro hug and it was a moment. And then when I sat down next to Chris Van Vliet. And he had said to me upstairs, he said, you know what? You got to come. Come. Because they gave me one of the little bands, right, for the press conference. And he said, you got to ask the first question. I'm like, yeah, right. And next thing I know, they hand me a mic and go, you ask the first question. I'm like, I don't have a question for him. But now I listen to him talk, and now I got a question for him. You know, the people who had been on the ride with him all this way, from the dashing Cody to the Stardust, and like, it did not look like he should ever be in this spot if we go back 5 years.
All right, that was WWE Hall of Famer Diamond Dallas Page talking to the Sporting Tribune's Adrian Hernandez. Again, he saw him at the Royal Rumble, which is how he started this conversation. But when we heard that Diamond Dallas Page would be highlighted in this Sunday's A&E Network biography, WWE Legends Diamond Dallas Page, I said, we got to have him on. We got to have DDP on. And again, the way that he talks to young superstars now is so inspiring in terms of, you know, his journey to get to where he got to, you know, and not just the young superstars, the older superstars who are having a hard time walking around, moving around. His DDP yoga, I've had the pleasure of talking to him on a number of occasions. And there's so many guys out there who just want to talk about their careers. He truly does want to change the lives of not only the younger superstars, but really help improve the lives of the like older superstars that he was in the ring with. And again, who are having a hard time moving and things like that. So I really enjoyed that conversation. All right. That's all the time we have for today. Let's do it again on Monday. Until then, this is Arash Markazi saying stay safe, stay healthy.
This is the Arash Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio. Hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing worldwide through the hard times.